Hello, my name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. Today in With Respect, we're going to be visiting with Robin Allen, who is the proprietor of Forever Books in St. Joseph, and we're going to be talking about summer books. We tried to talk to her a couple of times a year so we can find out what's new, what she recommends, and I get a chance to say my recommendations, and we just talk about how the book industry is going, and publications and self-publishing, all these various things we're going to roll into one. With respect, Robin Allen. We'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Robin Allen. And Robin, how are you doing today?
I'm great, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good. Well, you know, as I said before, every few times this year, we'd like to talk about the books that are out there because we believe in reading. And our listeners are probably more attached to it than anybody else. But what's out there, Robin?
Well, summer's a time to really enjoy. People actually save up books for summer so that they have something enjoyable to read. And I hear a lot of times something that's they want an escape, even if they're not going on vacation or if they'd like to bring something with them on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured out last time we spoke, I think we discussed maybe one or two mysteries.
Uh-huh.
So this time I'm going to hit you with the mysteries. And and I don't read mysteries that often, but most of these here I have read.
Mm-hmm.
So I've started a whole new chapter in
my reading. You've come to life. I mean,
yes. I've seen the light, John.
All right. Okay, good.
Now, the first one I did not read, this is Stevens. And trust me, when I tell you this title, this was his idea to read this book. And the title of the book is It's Always the Husband.
Okay.
By Michelle Campbell. And this is her first book. And Stephen just adored it. It's pretty much, there's three characters. They're roommates, Kate, Aubrey, and Jenny. And they're friends in college. And they stick together through thick and thin. But 20 years later, one of them is dead. And the police are convinced the husband is his fault. It's her fault. But secrets are not going to remain hidden, and the reader is forced to ask whether it is always the husband. So you'll have to read it to find out.
Back in the old days, it was always the butler who did it.
Right.
But now in our more enlightened time, we don't have as many butlers. We got to shift to somewhere, and now we're beating up on the husbands.
Or if there is a butler, we know the butler did not do it. So I think about a couple months ago, I got a call from the publishers of this book, and they asked me to write a short review. Every month there is a brochure, and it's books that are recommended by independent booksellers across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted me to submit something for that. And I said, I'm sorry, I just don't read Dean Koontz. I gave it to Steve, and he's the mystery reader. He goes, no, I'm sorry, I don't read Dean Koontz. So she said, Robin, I've never asked you, please. So I read it, and it was so good. It comes out, I believe, sometime in July, and it is called The Silent Corner by Dean Koontz. And actually, they picked my review, and it's printed in the flyer this month for July. So Dean Koontz's new heroine is Jane Stark, and she's a kick-ass and take-names FBI agent whose husband has taken his own life, and she's out to find out why. But the more she delves into the mystery, the more attention she draws to herself, and not in a good way. Dean is a master storyteller of suspense. He creates sharp twists and turns with originality that will challenge your intellect. It's a gripping, enthralling reader, a thriller, and I can't wait for the next installment. It's going to be a two-parter.
You know, you raised an interesting point, and we may have talked about this in the past, but there is a phenomenon, and it goes something like this. If you have an author that you have read their book, and they've got a lot of books that they get encouraged, all right, and they start writing, Dean Koontz is one of them. Scott Turow is another. Many of the romance or problem books that we've talked about with Jill Colby. Each of these, they get into series, and people really get into them. Why?
I think when it's the old thing, when you find an author that you like, you stick with what you're familiar with, what you're comfortable with, and also what you enjoy. I've never read a lot of series myself, except for Harry Potter, and there's one other kids series. So whether I'll read the second one, I don't know, but I really like this one.
Mm-hmm.
The next book is a John Grisham. I've never read John Grisham.
Ah,
but
okay.
This one is not a lawyer one, although there is a courtroom one coming out in the fall of his. And this one is Camino Island. And it's, of course, I had to read about this because it's about the theft of an original Faulkner manuscript that is stolen from a university library. And a novelist who's recently been sort of laid off from her job is hired by the insurance company to discover if this book dealer is the one that has stolen them. And they're pretty sure he is. He has opened a bookstore on Camino Island. It's an imaginary in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And her family has a home there. They know all of this. And they want her to ingratiate herself into that community. And there's other authors that are quite the characters. So it's a lot of fun. Includes a bookstore. And this book dealer who dabbles in the black market of stolen manuscripts is another character of this. And it was perfect beach read. Parts of it take place on the beach, and there's parties, and such good escapist reading.
Well, you know, it's interesting. My brother always talks about books that are the plot is, I took a journey and had experiences along the way.
Yes.
And it's like a Heart of Darkness. I went down the river, and Conrad writes about all the evils, bad things that can happen out of the jungle. But that's interesting because it does fit in, especially in this area with the beach, because so many of us spend a lot of time on the beach.
And you'll find if you come to the store, there's a whole table called Beach Reads.
Oh yeah,
and they all have either the word beach in them, or it's takes place in the water somewhere, and that's what people want. They want something that's maybe. That is escapism that has to do with the beach and the best-selling books in the store, the beach table.
One of the things that I'm going to stick in a plug right now, it's not a detective story. It's sort of a modified novel / sci-fi / something else. I'm not even exact, almost philosophy. It's a book called Spaceman of Bohemia, which I saw a review on somewhere, and I thought, oh, yeah, right. Well, I teach law, American law, over in the Czech Republic, and I picked this book up just for, you know, what's it going to be about. It is wonderful. I love this book.
The reviews are great on that book,
are they?
Too. Yes.
It is a wonderful book. I can't remember the author's name right this minute, but Spaceman of Bohemia is highly recommend it. But anyway, go ahead.
Tell us what it's about.
Well, that's fair. It is a man who, as we find out throughout the book, has had interesting, sometimes heartrending experiences in his life. And he is chosen by a powerful person in the Czech Republic to be a spaceman, to go off to Venus, which has generally been considered to be uninhabitable, to go after a strange cloud that has appeared and wafted over out of the asteroid belt and to the Venus area. Now, all of this sounds very spacey, you know, space science fiction, but that's only a very small part of this book. It's got mystery. It's got experiences with his life, his marriage, is all different kinds of things. Communism, his history under the communist rule up until 1989, the changes. Oh, it's the texture of this book is really very interesting, very interesting.
Good.
And I'm not going to say how it turns out. I don't do spoilers.
No, me
but
either.
I certainly recommend Spaceman of Bohemia.
Excellent. You can get it at Forever Books. Okay. A little plug there. Another person I've never read is Anthony Horowitz. And in the past 10 years, he's written science fiction kind of books, adventure type for kids and teens. I've not read any of those. But before he wrote for kids, I guess he wrote for adults. He wrote mysteries also. And this one is one of my favorites. And it is The Magpie Murders. And it's about a popular crime novelist who's just completed his novel called Magpie Murders. And it's about his detective that's in a series, Atticus Pund, who's investigating the murders at an English estate of Sir Magnus Pye. Well, he finishes the book, and after he's finished the book, he commits suicide.
Hmm.
But the last 10 pages are missing of the novel. And it's up to his editor, it's up for her to find out what happened. She doesn't believe that he killed himself, and if he did, why would he not leave the last 10 pages? So it's a sort of book within a book. You've got a mystery of the novel and a mystery mm-hmm. of the author, and it's clever, English-British humor, that kind of thing. Very,
sure,
very well done.
And I love English mysteries,
too.
And it's they're very – there's a whole new series – which is out of a British crime library or something like that.
The British Crime Classics.
British Crime Classics. And that series are really a collection of not Agatha Christie, not Dorothy, what's her name, Lord Peter Wimsey series. Those are very famous. Mm-hmm. But these are not famous people, but they wrote interesting stories in the periods from the 20s into the 40s. And they are republishing these and giving an interesting explanation in the beginning of each of these books about the author who may have dropped out of public knowledge years ago. But they resurrect these books. And I read a couple of them. They're very good.
I think you got them at the store because I bought that collection 2 years ago, and there's ongoing ones.
Yeah.
There's three that come out this summer, and I gave a few to Stephen to read, and he loves. He prefer Agatha Christie over James Patterson. Mm. I mean, that's his kind of reading.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really has enjoyed about three or four of them. So I'm glad you're enjoying them. Excellent.
By the way, just remember that the name of Spaceman of Bohemia is by Yaroslav Kalfar, Kalfar. So I just mentioned that to tie things together.
All right. Now, this is a local author. She, I believe, teaches at Western. She's a professor. I'm not sure what she teaches at Western. And it's called The Lake and the Lost Girl. She did sign these books. I guess she visited us about 3 weeks ago. We had her as a guest author. And it's her new novel. It tells the story of Mary Stonewalker, a Michigan poet who disappeared in 1939. And years later, 50 years later, Frank Carroll is a scholar who later becomes obsessed with her. And he risks his reputation and his family to solve the mystery of her disappearance. And it takes place on the shores of Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
It's purely fictional.
Purely fictional.
Purely fictional.
All right.
No, there was not a Michigan poet who disappeared, but
We're going to take
Stephen
a break.
Likes that.
We're going to take a break right now. We're talking to Robin Allen, who's the proprietor of Forever Books in St. Joseph, in our semi-annual discussion of new books that people might be interested in picking up for reading during this particular season of Laying on a Beach. This is John Smetanka on With Respect, and we'll be right back. Now back on With Respect with Robin Allen, who is the proprietor of Forever Books in St. Joseph. And this is John Smetanka on With Respect. And we're talking about various kinds of books that people might be interested in picking up for the summer reads. So what else do we have?
Well, we have a couple of nonfiction mysteries here. These are true stories, true crime. The one is from Stephen also, because he's the mystery reader. It's called The Fact of a Body, A Murder and a Memoir. And it's by Alexandria Marzano-Lesnovich. And she has written an intriguing combination of a true crime story and a memoir. Stephen writes, startled by her reaction to a murder case in Louisiana, she starts to examine the secrets of her own childhood while simultaneously trying to learn as much as she can about the murderer and his history. He thought it was a fascinating read, and he's a pretty picky reader when it comes to mysteries, and he really enjoyed it. I really enjoy, too, a combination of true crime and murder and a memoir. So the next one that we're going to have an author come sign, and he's written a book called Blood on the Mitten. It's Infamous Michigan Murders, 1700s to the Present. He is going to be signing, I believe it is August 1st, I believe. I think it's August 1st. And these are crimes of passion, cold calculated evil. And there's 57 illustrated read out loud tales from across time. And it looks at the historical context of murder in Michigan and beyond. So this includes crooked sheriffs, ruthless gangsters, serial killers, mass murderers, Wild West-style bandits, and he even writes pirates. Interesting. So these miscreants do their dastardly deeds in this book, and a fascinating look of Michigan history. So each chapter contains a murder map. It's a unique guide for the stout of heart who would like to follow in the steps of this character, of each characters who committed these crimes. So he has, it's going to be interesting because he's going to do a 45-minute presentation, which would be nice. I love accompanying presentations in the store.
You know, tying mysteries and beach reading and whatnot to something else you've been talking about, several of the books you've been talking about are quasi-historical books, novels about things that happened in the past and has impact on the present. And we've talked about some of these in the past that are really interesting. Who really wrote Shakespeare's plays? Was it really Shakespeare? How did this person die? Was this person back in the 1400s really murdered, or did they commit suicide, or did they even exist? Those are kind of interesting things. But you also combine that with what we talked about, which is different authors that we get into strings and we kind of like them. And I want to toss in one because I just saw a reprint of one of his books in your store. His name is Ian Pierce. And Ian writes two kinds of novels. One is just almost pulp fiction about an art dealer, and I don't find them all that interesting. However, he wrote three books which are in this historical fiction genre, which I think are really fascinating. One is Arcadia, which is the one that has just been reprinted in paperback, and I saw it in your store. Then two others are The Instance of the Finger Post and The Dream of Scipio. And each of those are really fascinating. It's like Umberto Eco, who writes these historical novels. But then there's a heavy dose of, you learn about science, you learn about art, you learn about literature. And it's just, I always find that added extra to
a
novel.
There is a novel. Being a former high school history teacher, I get a little picky and a little frustrated at historical fiction because the author takes liberties with chronology and facts. But Diana read one, it's called The Last Days of Night, and it's about this, you know, it's about a true story, but it's a novel version, and it's this guy fresh out of law school. He's hired to defend George Westinghouse in a $1 billion lawsuit filed by Thomas Edison, who invented the light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
He enlists the help of Nikola Tesla, the brilliant inventor, whom he believes holds the answer to the question, who invented the light bulb. I just read some trivia the other day that neither of them did, but anyway. But there is some mystery and suspense to it. She really enjoyed that. So that case, it is kind of fun because then you want to look beyond it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now
exactly.
We have...
What you really want to do is once you've finished it, and you hate to see it finish because it's so interesting. So many of these books are just really, really interesting reads. But you say, well, what about electricity?
Yes.
What about Shakespeare? What about this and that? That's
you want to
great.
Do a really good book makes you want to delve into more of that,
right?
Which is probably why people read series too.
Mm-hmm.
They want more.
Mm-hmm.
They want more, and sometimes authors disappoint. I know Anita Shreve wrote this book called The Pilot's Wife that was just the bestseller. Did so well. And I read a couple of her other books, and they were okay. And so I kind of dropped her. Well, she has one that came out in the spring. I think it's When the Stars Come Home or something like that. And it was based on one of the worst fire that took place along the East Coast. I believe we talked about it the last time you and I spoke.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's one of the best books I've read this summer. So,
hey, go figure.
Give him another chance.
Well, one of my favorite crime writers is Scott Turow. And he's ever since Presumed Innocent was made into a movie and many other books he's written. I find them fascinating, except you really get into a mode with these folks. And just like I did with John Grisham, I love John Grisham's book, The Firm, until the last 20 pages. And it just went, it was almost like he wrote it on vacation, and then his editor said, you got to finish this book, you know, get it done. And so all of a sudden, the last 20 pages is just scribbled.
I hate that.
I really do hate it because it didn't have the quality that the first 300 pages had. And the same thing I found with this latest book by Scott Turow. I found it interesting, especially at the end. It was a well-crafted ending, and I learned about, I'm not going to do blow the story, but it is about war crimes, the murder of 400 gypsies in Bosnia and Herzegovina during the Troubles that went there when we went in and stopped the Serbs from massacring people. Well, at any rate, it's a fascinating book, but that first 30 pages got me. I just wanted to fall asleep, but then, as I say, it picked up.
Well, the next book I'm going to talk about did the opposite. It is called Before the Fall, and so many booksellers were talking about this book that I was intrigued and picked it up. And Before the Fall by Noah Hawley, he's a award-winning writer. you literally cannot stop reading the first 100 pages. You are just gripped because it's about a private jet that crashes into the Atlantic off the coast of New England and the harrowing survival of two of its passengers, which you find raises more questions than answers. At first, artist Scott Burrows is the hero because he has rescued this four-year-old. And after a while, it becomes the object of suspicion. And you find out, you go back and you hear the stories of each of those passengers on that plane and what led to the crash and who is somebody responsible for this. But you can't stop. There's times when you can't stop. And I know there's lots of readers. I'm sure you're starting out, you gain momentum, you're in the middle, and as you're on the down, you realize that you're getting at the end and you just want to slow down.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You don't want it to end. Especially big books. You're thinking 600, 700, 800 pages. I just don't know. You get halfway through and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I have all of this to go, which is the reason why people like to read books rather than sometimes e-readers, because you can see how you are progressing through the novel.
Mm-hmm.
You see the visual proof of how you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas an e-reader, there's a number, a page, something or whatever, but you don't visually see less pages on, more pages on your left and pages from the right disappearing.
And the other thing too on that is when you're handling a book, if you're reading an ebook, and I read ebooks, I love ebooks for when I'm in a restaurant, I'm by myself and I just want to distract myself. Yeah, traveling. That means I don't have to carry a bunch of books with me. They're actually just this my little e-reader. But when I start to read one of those, I get to a part of the book that, God, I forgot how that plot line started. You can't go automatically back. It's much easier with that hardback paper or paperback book that you can say, oh, I know, quickly, and you just flip right back to the page or the area where that plot line or character popped up.
I do use my e-reader because publishers send us advanced reader's copies, and sometimes it's difficult to read a really thick book or to carry all those home, so I do sometimes. The other thing about an e-reader is you can push on the name of a character, and you can find out where in the rest of the book is that character,
which is helpful. Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah.
I was in a bookstore recently over in Chicago area, and I was looking around for, something new coming up, and I saw something that I could not believe, and that is there is a new book, which is the complete biography of Barack Obama. It is 1,200 pages. It's like a stack all by itself. And I'm thinking, you got to really love Barack Obama to want to go through 1,200 pages. But at any rate, maybe it'll tell us all something we didn't know.
His photographer, White House photographer, is renowned and is going to put out a beautiful collection of photographs in a big coffee table book. And I think that's going to be the Christmas present because I saw some of the photographs and they're just stunning.
Yeah.
They really are. So, okay. Well, this isn't really a mystery, but sort of a little bit. I'm going to segue into some other books. I might jump around a little bit. And this one is one of my absolute favorites of the summer. And it's called The Marsh King's Daughter. And it's by Karen Dion. And it is the story of, when I found out what the story was about, I was a little, I don't know about this, but people were just talking how great this book is. And I'm hoping upon hope that she will come and sign. I think she might be coming in October. So Helena and her mother are trapped in the swampy wilderness of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. They're held captive. She doesn't think she's held captive, but they are being held captive by her father, who kidnapped her mother when she was a teenager, and Helena was born a year later.
Hmm.
So it sounds pretty rough, and I thought, well, I'm going to give it a try anyway, and it's just absolutely wonderful. And you find out at the very, very beginning that they did escape 14 years later when she was 14. And at the beginning of the book, she's a grown woman. She has two little girls. She's on her way home, and she's found out that her father has escaped from prison, killed a prison guard.
Hmm.
And because she was trained in the woods as a survivalist, and so was he, she decides she's going to take it upon herself to go get him.
Whoa.
And so I wrote on my little blurb here in the store, it's captivating, with the pun intended. I could not stop reading it. I had to read it in one sitting. And I think I finished it like 3 a.m. and just went, oh. It, very, very well done.
Okay. Well, we're going to take another break now. We're talking to Robin Allen, the proprietor of Forever Books in St. Joseph, and we've been doing a survey of different books that are out there that strike our fancy, and then also the concept of historical fiction and detective stories and authors that we find our favorite authors. We're going to come back to that issue a little bit later. This is John Smetanka. We're on With Respect, and we'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Robin Allen, the proprietor, owner of Forever Books in St. Joseph. And we're talking about summer reads and any other things that might come up along the way. This is John Smetanka on With Respect. So, go ahead.
Okay.
Got another one?
Yes. And we have this man is going to be signing July 17th at 6:30. We're going to have a wine and cheese reception to launch his new book. And it is Lakeshore High School history teacher Chuck Jaeger has written a book, and it's called Peddling the Pioneer Path. And in the summer of 2015, he hopped on his bicycle in downtown Detroit and set off across Michigan. And it took him 5 days. He retraced the old territorial road from Detroit to here. And it's the route that Michigan pioneers used in the 1830s. He not only shares his adventures, but also the history of the road and the sites along Michigan's 19th century Main Street. Part history, part travel guide, part memoir. It'll take you on a bicycle adventure across Michigan and back through the past. And parts of it are really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Very well done.
I read it. I liked it. It is, again, I said earlier, he takes a journey and has experiences along the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. And the other thing which is interesting to me about that book is as he goes through it, about 30% or maybe a little bit more of the places that he stops and sees, I've been to. And it's sometimes I learn much more than I would have known, even though I had been to this particular, like Marshall, the city of Marshall is really interesting when he describes the history of Marshall. And most especially when he gets to the Van Buren and Berrien County area, and he talks about places that I've known all my life. But it's a new twist. I learn new things from it. I think it's great. I like it.
Exactly. And I'm hoping that you'll get a chance to talk to him on your radio show.
We very well will.
Okay, great. So that'll be fun. I think I'll finish up just with a couple of nonfiction books. One is called Love Africa by Jeffrey Gettleman. Diana loved this book. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist for the New York Times, and he's reported from some of the most dangerous places in the world for the past 20 years. But in the 90s, he took a year off school to travel to Africa, where he fell in love with everything about Africa. And upon returning to his studies, he falls in love with a young woman, and he's torn between his two passions, Africa or the woman. I won't tell you which one he picked, but I think the audience can guess. She thought it was a wonderful book. I started reading it and said it was so good, and she said she had started reading it, so I acquiesced and gave it to her. I don't know if we talked about the next one or not, and if we haven't, I'm still going to talk about it because it's a very important book. People are comparing this to Silent Spring, Rachel Carson, and the effect on the environment. And it is Life and Death of the Great Lakes by Dan Egan. And this is really important book for anyone who's interested in Great Lakes ecology, and it has a riveting account of the introduction of invasive species into our waterways and how we've helped spread them to the rest of the country, destroying their waters too. It's not all gloom and doom. There is some hope at the end, and it does offer a hopeful future for the largest bodies of fresh water in the world.
It's funny you mention that because I have been reading that book, and I'm about a third of the way, quarter to a third of the way through it. I agree. It's very good. I thought it was going to be just either a screed or it was going to be boring and facts. And it is very well written, and it's a very enjoyable read, but you really get a lot of facts in a usable form from this book about the Great Lakes.
And we've lived here. You know, we're living this area, and there are things that I had no idea
were going
on. So,
well, I'm gonna jump in here because I've had as a guest on this show an author by the name of Lynn Olson, and Lynn Olson wrote 6 or 7 books. She is a fascinating individual. Started off as a journalism major, and I think she told me that her first job for United Press International, or AP, the Associated Press, when she was looking for a job, she was hired as a society reporter. And, you know, we all joke about that's, you know, back in the day, that's what women got, is the society page. Well, she got a call one day from her editor and said, We're going to give you a new assignment. What's that? And she was thinking, oh, I'll get the gift shops, you know, and that. We're sending you to Russia to be our bureau correspondent in Moscow. This was during communism's days. And she said, absolutely. She spoke no Russian. She had never thought about going to Russia, apparently. And she spent 3 years being followed by the KGB and having to be careful of what she wrote. And she came back, and she and her husband have written a whole series of books. Now, they became fascinated with the period in American and European history from about 1936 on to the end of the Second World War. I can't put those books down. And the reason I mention it now is this quadrilogy of books on that period is just been completed, I presume, by a book that she just released called Last Hope Island. And it's about all of the exile governments of the European continent, their leaders that came to Britain in the Second World War, at the beginning of the Second World War, and began to do in different ways to deal with their own people back home. And you go through it and you just ache for these countries. Holland, Norway, Belgium, France. You just can't believe how the stress that was put on these governments in exile and how they did or did not cooperate and how the British American and Russian governments did or did not help them or sometimes suppress them, as in the Russian government. For example, in one of her other books, which also appears in this Last Hope Island, it's called A Question of Honor. It's about the Kosciuszko squadron of Polish pilots that fought with the British. And they went through tons of discrimination, mocking, and disrespect, until finally they showed their true skills and mettle. And the British Air Force, in fact, the officers that had looked down on them, all of a sudden, they were in love with these with the Czech pilots and the Polish pilots and the who had escaped from their countries when the Germans came in. And you read about these people, and at the end of the war, when they had a massive parade of all the countries and the armies that had taken part in the Second World War on the side of the Allies. Australia, New Zealand, Russia, everybody sent troops and to parade or people to parade, except for the Polish pilots. And they were not allowed to walk with everybody else, even though they had been the best fighters in the British Air Force. Why? Because the Russians didn't like it. They didn't want to offend the Russians who had taken over that country. And it's just one thing after another. But anyway, the Last Hope Island is built on the concept that these people came from the various countries, Queen Wilhelmina, thank you, gave a speech. She had been raised as a sheltered monarch where she saw nothing going on around her. She was not allowed to be with the people. She got to Britain. She wanted to stay there and fight the Germans, but they said, no, no, you got to get to Britain. And she gave a speech which was so inspiring on BBC that it completely changed her image with her own people back home. And she was just a marvelous heroine for her country before, during, and after the war. But anyways, I think that if you haven't read Lynn Olson, you're missing a real treat if you're interested in history. It's not fiction, it's history. But anyway, that's my one of my favorite authors and favorite books.
Well, this might segue into this is a fiction, and then I have some fun beach reads that are just escapism, especially for women, I think, would enjoy these. But the first one is called The Baker's Secret, and it is a beautifully written account of the emotional and moral struggles of a small Normandy village during the 2 days that lead up to D-Day.
Mm.
So you wonder about these communities and these villages that are surrounding, and they are occupied, and how they have to, they've already been occupied, and now they're going to be reoccupied or released. So I thought it might be a bit of a fluff, but it was not. And under German occupation, the villagers learned to work together to survive. And the baker's secret is a woman baker, I won't tell you how she came to take over because it is a tragedy, but she takes over the bakery. And when the Germans come in, they give her flour to bake 12 loaves, and she cuts it with hay. And to make the flour so it will stretch to one extra loaf. So they get one extra loaf a week, and she takes care of the people that are the hungriest. They get the loaf. And it's sort of a pay-it-forward kind of story where the rest of the community realizes that we all have to deal with this together. And it's a kind of a feel-good, some of it's sad, but most of it is really enjoyable and a feel-good novel.
There are, let me just step back to what I talked about with Lynn Olson. There are in history, and sometimes you get it in novels, but certainly in the good history, you see the parallels between the past and the present. And I was talking to a historian recently who was on our show and talked about the human nature, individuals and human nature as a whole, has many of the same characteristics. They're latent in all of us. Love, hate, greed, selflessness, power, weakness, and all of these sorts of things which produce in individuals textured differences. That's how the most interesting people among us, I say, are the ones that go zigzag through life, because those zigzags, not a direct line to their favorite their plan when they're 6 years old. They want to be a concert pianist, and there's nothing that moves that person except to be the concert pianist. Now, I'm talking about most people, me certainly. You go one way, and oops, something stops you. You know, you don't have enough money to do something. Then your divorce, sickness, death of parents, and so on and so on. All these different things can happen to change your direction in life, but it also makes you.
Well, that's what's interesting about history is it's more about the people. And even in novels, you want to see this character or this person in history took this path and they could have chosen another path. Mm-hmm. Or when things get really tough, people that maybe aren't that strong morally or just
psychologically,
they are not any better under stress. If anything, their true colors come out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But those people that are heroes, they come out as stronger in the end. And that's what's so interesting about history. If this person hadn't, and a lot of novelists write about that. I know Stephen King wrote a book, 1963, about what if Kennedy hadn't been
killed?
What would have happened? So how would our country have changed?
And there's a very popular, back in the 60s, there's a book that came out which was fascinating, which said, what if the South had won the Civil War?
Mm-hmm.
There's another great book out of Britain whose name is escaping me, but it's about what would have happened if the Germans invaded and conquered Britain. And they talked, it was not just fluff, it dealt with the daily lives of people. And in that, I come back again to this concept that not only people share all these emotions that I described, but these constituent parts of our psyches, but nations do. Large groups of people can become overcome by greed or can become very giving, and so on. So that's, I come back to this and I say, history repeats itself in many respects, and we can learn from it. And when I talk about Lynn Olson,
you'd think we'd learn.
One would hope if we learn. All right. At any rate, we're going to take a break right now. We're talking to Robin Allen, the proprietor of Forever Books in St. Joseph. We've been talking about different kinds of books, different authors and whatnot, and we're going to take a break now and come back and talk about the easiest thing, because we're going to talk about beach reads, and that's going to be fun. This is John Smetanka, Run With Respect, and we'll be right back. Now back on With Respect with Robin Allen, the proprietor of Forever Books in St. Joseph, and this is John Smetanka. So, you got some good light reading for us.
Good light reading. This one is from Sherry, and it's called, believe it or not, The Book of Summer.
Huh?
It's by Michelle Gable, and she writes here, summer spent at Cliff House since 1939 are about to end. The house being claimed by the Atlantic. Daughter Bess has been dispatched from California to convince her mother to leave the house. But this is also based on real-life erosion that's on a Sankaty Bluff in Nantucket. So she says it's the perfect summer read, a multi-generational family saga, old and new relationship stories, a beach town, community politics, and World War II. And Sherry writes on her little review here, pull up your beach chair. So, and sure enough, it has a beach on the front, so yeah. And it's been selling really well. The other one is by a woman who grew up in Grand Haven. She is Suzanne Kamada. She lives in Japan. She is coming back, I think, to see family, and she's also going to do a signing of her book, and it's called Mermaids of Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also a crossover for teenage girls, too. A teenage Elise Faulkner feels more at home in water than on land, where her beauty queen mom is constantly criticizing her, and her sister, of course, has the dream boyfriend. Well, she meets this young girl who leads her to a mysterious carnival worker whose dark future has been predicted. We've sold so many of this book, so I looked up the reviews, and Kirkus Reviews loved it, which shocked the heck out of me. They write, a water-loving girl struggles to find her place on land in this novel. Growing up in Grand Haven, Michigan, by the shores of Lake Michigan, she's shy and withdrawn, much to the chagrin of her ex-beauty queen mother. But readers carried along by Elise's tale will find themselves wanting more. A lyrical, compelling coming-of-age story with magical elements. Do not judge what you read or what people pick out. Somebody bought a book, I won't say what the title is, they brought it up, and they were apologizing to me. And I said, read what you love. It's like with wine, drink what you like.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget when I first opened the store, brand new. I heard about this book, and it was it was about this, she was a writer for Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she had this torrid love affair with this cowboy. True story. Oh, I wanted to read something about it. I wanted to read, but I would not buy it myself from my own bookstore because I didn't want my staff to unpack it and go, this is what she's reading. So when I got the book in the mail, I realized.
And what you did is you put a brown paper wrapper on it so that
no
one would see it.
Oh, no, I had it sent to the house. I sent it to my house. I realized how foolish that was, and I really enjoyed that book.
Mm-hmm.
So it really taught me a lesson, and I tell my staff all the time, when someone asks you a question, if you don't know, just say, I don't know, or I've never heard of that author, because there's always going to be someone who's much smarter than you are in our store. And you have to admit that you don't know, or you can find out the answer.
One of the things that back in the day, I was up in Grand Rapids, and I got used to going to Schuler's Books on 28th Street, and that would be a great place for myself and my daughter to go on a Saturday. I would kind of browse for hours.
Love that bookstore.
And my daughter would sit in a corner in the children's section, and she would merrily read away, and I had to tear her out of the place. It was great. But one of the things I really appreciated about that store was that if you saw a salesperson and it happened to be in the mystery section, you could say, what about so-and-so? And they knew what you were talking about. Or they say, here's my interest. Who would be a good writer? And darn if they didn't come up with it. It was people who read and understood and loved books. Now, not too long after that, there was a large, who shall remain nameless, bookseller that opened a store in that general area. And I went in because I'd got great price. I could, they had big deals on buying books. So when I went in and I went to the mystery section and I talked to the person who was the cognizant person, and I asked him about this any particular novel that they thought was really good. I don't know. I haven't read any of these. I thought, why in heaven's name?
Yeah.
You put the person who has never read even a little bit of what is they're supposed to be helping the customer with. Why do you do that? And the answer is, I don't know.
There's a good sign of a good bookstore when you see reviews by the staff on the shelves.
Yeah.
I mean, our staff has been there. I think Stephen's been there 7 years. Sherry's been there 14, and Diana's been there 16.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I've been there from the beginning. And we all read a lot, and you have to read a lot. So it's great because we all know what each other have read.
Yeah.
So I know Stephen's a big mystery person, although I'm catching up. But got a long way to go. I like to read a lot of nonfiction. Diana likes to read literary fiction, and she'll foray into other things. And Sherry likes women's fiction, anything about food.
Mm.
And she loves Paris. So she went to Paris, and she just loves Paris. So,
well, I tell you, this show and my interview of an author changed my life, my physique, I'll tell you, because there was a woman who was she was a part owner, I think, but certainly a publicist for the Chicago Diner, which is in Chicago.
Cat
Berry.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to review her book, and it was a cookbook. Well, I said, what am I going to do with a cookbook? And she not only wrote a cookbook from the Chicago Diner, but she's a vegan. And I'm sorry, I'm meat and potatoes guy. I guess the potatoes kind of, you know, sort of qualify as a vegetarian food. But I thought, how can you have a discussion? I always read a book for an author I'm going to be talking to, read at least one of their books. Well, I said, the only thing I can do with a cookbook is to try to cook something. So I picked out what I thought seemed to be the easiest thing, which was a particular kind of soup. And I thought, well, what the hell? Can I poison myself? Maybe I can. But I cooked this particular soup, and it was all vegan and cooking. And my Lord, that was really good. So I went on a kick of cutting down on the meat intake and accelerating the vegetable table to my diet. It was wonderful. I took off bunches of pounds. It was great. I was healthy. I felt happy. So that book actually changed my life.
Books change your life.
They books really do change. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Okay. Why do you do what you do? Why do you sell books? Now, I'm going to say you need to make a living. You need to support yourself and your wild living your hobbies and all this sort of thing. But why books? Why do you sell books?
Well, for me, of course, it's personal because I grew up reading books. I like, there's a saying, I just read the quote, I read books because I only have one life to live, and through books I can live many lives.
Ah.
I don't know who it was. I just read that quote actually today, and I can't recall who said it. But people who love books understand books, and people who don't and don't read, it's really difficult to tell them what they're missing. So because it was something that I grew up in, mm-hmm. because I grew up in a family that when you're at the dinner table and there's a question, you get the dictionary, the encyclopedias back then, showing my age, and you bring it to the dinner table and you read and let everybody know what's mm-hmm. going on. So mm-hmm. it's not just that, but they make you feel differently. Mm-hmm. They make you increase your empathy, your sympathy, your point of view. It really expands it.
Robin Allen.
This Except in the summertime, you just want some fun, just read whatever the heck you want.
All right. thank you very much. This has been great. We've been talking to Robin Allen, who is the proprietor of Forever Books in St. Joseph. We've been just talking about books and why people are interested, it's been a lot of fun. Now, this is With Respect, and we're on every Sunday and Thursday. And remember, until next time, if you show respect to other people, they will show respect to you. ¶¶